So you're coming tomorrow to speak at WIU. How did you sort of – how did this come about? How did the speaking engagement get lined up?
Well, it's quite interesting. I'm a native of West Central Illinois, actually. My father has been still farming near Quincy. And I travel the country speaking. I currently live in a ranch in central Nebraska, by the way. And I travel the country speaking all over the nation, about 40 states each year, three Canadian provinces, and Australia twice in the past 14 months. And I was speaking in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, during the Pennsylvania Farm Show this year. And Bart Gill, who's a native Pennsylvanian who is now professor at Western Illinois University, actually was there. We had the opportunity to get together, and he said, we would sure like to get you on campus at Western Illinois University. So it's kind of an interesting little story that I'm a native of West Central Illinois, but it was speaking in Pennsylvania that somebody asked me to come back home. So that's how it all came to be, and I'm really looking forward to the opportunity to get back into the home area and explain some of the challenges that we have in understanding modern food production today.
Now, I know WIU has a pretty established, successful ag program, so you're going to be talking to a lot of kids who probably will be, you know, farming eventually or involved somehow in agriculture. What are some of the big things that you want them to get to sort of take away from this?
Well, the biggest thing that I want anybody to take away is that we've been very complacent in farming and ranching communities and explaining how we implement the latest in science and technology to produce more with less. In the 18th century, it required 5 acres of land to produce enough food to sustain one human life for a year. And thanks to the implementation of the science and technology, which has come about through research at universities like Western Illinois University, we now have 1/2 acre of land producing enough food to sustain a person for a year. And that's vitally important as we continue to head forward, because we know that by 2050, we'll have 9.3 billion people on the planet. We're not making more land, but there will be no challenge in feeding that ever-growing population as long as we have the ability to continue to implement the science and technology that we know that we can make work to produce more with less. And I'm talking about things like genetic modification and crop production. I'm talking about the hormone use in animal agriculture. I'm talking about one of the tools in producing a healthier animal and a safer food supply, such as antibiotic usage. There's a lot of misconceptions about those particular buzzwords in today's world, and I'll use some illustrations on how we can all do a better job explaining to the non-farm public the importance of these tools and the safety of these tools and why they need to continue to be implemented on farms and ranches, not only in Illinois, but around the nation.
Do you think maybe some of the backlash or some of the hesitance with accepting some of these practices is due to valid scientific concerns, or most of it is it misunderstanding? Where do you think some of that distrust of some of these practices comes from?
I don't believe any of it is valid scientific concerns. I believe it's the emotion of the day. It speaks volumes to the disconnect that people have not been involved in food production for so long that we don't really have a grasp on what's going on, and we all still romance the American Gothic style of food production, which actually that picture we're all so familiar with happened just across the river in southeast Iowa. And I think we have this romance that food production should still be in that simple way. In fact, it's not at all the case. We have farmers that are using guidance systems in their tractors so that they know exactly how much nutrient needs to be applied in every portion of their field. And all of that science and technology, again, contributes to producing more with less. And while we're very cognizant of the fact that we need to be aware that we don't want science to get too far ahead of us, I'm not aware of any bit of scientific evidence today on the implementation of genetically engineered crops, or right now the Food and Drug Administration is asking for comments on genetically engineered salmon. All of these things contribute to improving human life, producing more food with less resources. And we just need emotion combined with a bit of science that we have about these initiatives to really come forward to 315 million Americans so that they can understand the people close to the land, care about the land, they care about the animals, but ultimately we care about making sure that 315 million Americans have an adequate supply of food, fiber, and fuel on a daily basis.
You know, going back to that, you know, there's a lot of people that are going in for organic food, local food, do you think that's a viable way to go, or do you think that maybe is an outgrowth of people not understanding, you know, some of those principles that you were talking about?
I think a large majority of that is a failure in understanding the science that's being implemented in today's food production. But at the same time, I celebrate that we live in the United States of America, where we have that freedom to choose local food or organically produced food. I make the statement that local food is a wonderful choice. It's terrible food policy. And what I mean by that is that if you as a consumer want to purchase your food from someone that you know, I applaud you and think that that's a great opportunity for a family. But the European Union has actually implemented that as their food policy. And as a direct result, what has happened is that they have gone from 20% of their food consumed in 1997 that was imported to where today, and I should say in 2012, 60% of their food has been imported from other countries because they have placed so many regulations on the adaptation of science and technology that they can no longer produce the food that they need to feed their own population and the European Union, those 27 countries. And, oh, by the way, at the same time, their cost of food per capita has increased by 33%. So, you know, I would ask the person who thinks they need to purchase organic food why it is that you think organic food is important. And if you tell me it's because chemicals are dangerous, well, then I would tell you that the most consumed chemical in the world is caffeine, a naturally occurring pesticide that the coffee plant produces to protect itself. So are you avoiding caffeine? Because chemicals have actually improved human lives. And again, I celebrate the choices that we have as American consumers, but to think that that should lead to policy and more regression in food production is just not wise for the human population.
What about some claims and some research that this generation will have maybe a shorter life expectancy because of, in large part, lots of processed food, lots of food coming from commodities? Do you think that is valid scientifically? Do you think that that is a concern that people should, you know, try to grapple with in these different ways, like pursuing local food, pursuing organic food? What are your views on that issue?
I do not dispute, actually, that our life expectancy could be shortening. I would 100% dispute that it has anything to do with what we're eating, processed food, organic food, whatever the case may be. I think if you look at the human body was built to consume a large number of calories and then burn off more calories than we consume. We all want to demonize one particular food group, and eliminate it and think that we're going to live healthier. Truth of the matter is that healthy living is a consumption of all food groups in moderation and exercise more than you eat. If you look at the trend in terms of obesity, which one cannot argue that we have a large number of people that are overweight, but it's directly tied to our sedentary lifestyles. It has nothing to do with white potatoes. It has everything to do with couch potatoes. And we're now trying to bring our caloric intake down to meet what our sedentary lifestyle requires in terms of burning calories. And I think that's why you see a growth in a severe number of people that are vitamin D deficient, a severe number of people that are calcium deficient, because we're actually starving our bodies to meet our sedentary lifestyle. If there's one area that we really need to focus on, it is increasing our activity and burning more calories.
Now, I think, you know, one of the issues that may be tied sort of to that is, when you have a more sedentary lifestyle, wouldn't eating more fruits and vegetables be, you know, a bit more healthy? And isn't that harder when the cheapest food is the least nutritious food?
I don't know what the most nutritious or least nutritious food is. All food groups are vitally important and play a role in healthy living. Fruits and vegetables are certainly part of healthy living, but so is the consumption of milk, meat, and eggs. And one thing that I've spent a great deal of time on is researching fat. We've demonized fat consumption for so many years in the United States, and yet as we continue to demonize fat, whether it be monounsaturated fat, whether it be saturated fat, our nation continues to grow in our waistline, and I think it's because fat's not really the culprit. It, again, is the sedentary lifestyle. So to answer your question point blank is that fruits and vegetables are vitally important for healthy living, right alongside milk, meat, and egg consumption, which if you look at the components that truly develop the brain and work with the immune system, those are components that come from animal agriculture. The best are, yes, milk, meat, and egg consumption. The absolute best source of brain food is eggs. Eggs, which provide the best source of choline, have proven to improve the brain cognition of children from mothers who eat more eggs and bacon during pregnancy. So while I do not demonize any food group, we cannot get away from a consumption of a moderate amount of all foods and exercise more than you eat. It's just that simple for me.
And do you think that there is – I know in Iowa there was the whole pink slime scare. And do you think that maybe was caused by people just not – by that sort of disconnect with the food supply, of people just not having a full understanding of what these processes were doing to their food? Do you think maybe people were a little more scared than was warranted?
Absolutely. They were more scared than warranted. And it was not just Iowa. It was nationwide. The company that administered the pink slime, as you call it, the finely textured lean beef is what it actually was and is based in Iowa, but it's a nationwide phenomenon. And I'll give you an example. The components of that beef are actually the same components that preserve mayonnaise, mustard, even blue cheeses, that they may be able to be in our foodstuffs without causing increase in foodborne bacteria. There's three times as much of that component in blue cheese, for example, on a cheeseburger as there is in the burger itself. And yet everybody wanted to demonize the burger. And now, as we have now rejected that technology, we've rejected the utilization of 1.5 million head worth of beef cattle. In other words, 1.5 million head of cattle producing beef is what's now going to waste instead of being incorporated back into the food system through the technology that we call finely textured lean beef. And it just came back to a complete misunderstanding of how that technology contributes to my overall premise. What I talk about is producing more with less.
Well, all right. And, you know, I think before we go, do you have anything, you know, that you hope, and I sort of touched on this before, that, you know, what you hope people really take away from your talk about agriculture, whether they be new students or students that may go into agriculture like we were talking before, or just the general public?
Mm-hmm. Quite frankly, I don't care how many potential farmers we have in the audience. I hope that anybody who eats takes an interest in what I will be discussing tomorrow at Western Illinois University, because there are some terrible precedents that are tremendously dangerous to feeding the world if we do not all have a better understanding of these technological advancements that have made the United States farming and ranching system the premier food production system in the world. So I hope anybody who cares about where their food comes from, how it's produced, how the environment is protected in the process will come and listen and take me on, ask questions, and challenge me to some of the thoughts that I might present. That would be an ideal scenario.
All right. Thank you very much for taking the time to talk with me.
My pleasure.